Man, how many just feel the Spirit of God tonight? I think this next beatitude is it's probably my favorite. It's also the toughest because, you know, there's this whole crisis moment all of our lives until we know Jesus. And I, even though I was raised in church most of my life, I didn't become a Christian until I was 16 years old. And it was still a miraculous moment because it's a miracle that God would save any of us. And tonight, the real challenge tonight is to really see God for who He is. And it's so tough because there are so many aspects of God that people just want to grab onto and hang on to that aspect, and yet it's a full realm. And so tonight we're going to look at, you know, blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Why? What will happen? For they will be filled. And what does that mean? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Has anybody here ever been hungry? And I don't mean like America hungry. I mean like CNN hungry. And the images we see on the news from people all over the world who are hungry. You know, I can honestly tell you, I don't know that I'd ever have ever been hungry like that. And I don't know that I'd ever been thirsty like that. And then when you bring it into a spiritual realm, I just have to be honest and say that maybe there's been a few times in my life that I've really, truly hungered and thirsted for God. But I got to tell you, I can recall every one of those moments in my life. Some of them were birthed out of a great need or a great problem or a great crisis. Have you ever been there? I mean, when it seems like nothing's going to work out, when it seems like everything's against you, when it seems like there is utter despair and hopelessness, have you been there? And you just wondered that maybe tomorrow not coming isn't a horrible option. And in some of those moments like that is birthed this hunger and thirst for God. But I'm going to tell you, this, I may preach till 9 o'clock tonight. Because if we could get to that place in our lives where we truly hungered and thirsted for God, it would be incredible. And I'm going to tell you, God has done unbelievable things out of moments like that in people's lives. Revivals have been started. Revolutions have been started when people truly hunger and thirst for God. Well, it's written here in this beatitude, blessed are they who hunger and thirst for God. I keep saying that. Nobody's corrected me yet. Does it say blessed are those who hunger and thirst for God? For righteousness. But you are like, well, he must know what he's talking about. I mean, he is up there. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. The first thing I just thought about is this hunger and thirst issue. And I don't know how in America we can really grasp these concepts of hunger and thirst. And I was really trying to think today, how can you really illustrate that? Because when this was written, hunger and thirst was something everybody knew about. Because there were times when God opened the floodgates of heaven and everybody ate and everybody drank. And there were times when God shut those gates and people didn't eat and they didn't drink. And it was those moments that drove them to trust God. And so here we are in America trying to really understand hunger and thirst. And it's hard because if you're driving down the road and you feel like you're hungry, you just go to McDonald's. Or you just run through the drive-thru. Or I go to Ryan's, the buffet place. And they always, when they see me come in, they always pull a chair right up to the buffet because they know that's where I like to sit. I mean, to hunger and thirst. And I don't know, you know, maybe I could preach till 8 on how do we hunger and thirst. But I don't know that we really get that except just in a concept. That this is talking about, that there's a desperate need. And it's a need that's likened to hungering and thirsting for righteousness. Now that just, you know, for righteousness. I mean, what's righteousness? I mean, I can say I've hungered and thirsted for God, but have you ever hungered and thirsted for righteousness? And so I looked up righteousness. And Noah Webster kind of wrote a little bit about righteousness, and I looked up, and basically righteousness is right things. Things that are right, that I want to long for those things. And when I read that, because I thought that I may be able to say, I want you to know as your Wednesday night pastor, I've hunger and thirsted for God. When I looked at righteousness and I thought about that, I don't know that I've hungered and thirsted for those things that are right. Now, let me just, I want to prepare everybody tonight. And I'm going to ask you just to really just listen tonight. And I don't have a lot of stories and jokes and stuff like that tonight. Just really want you to listen. I really want you to hear not my heart on this, but God's heart on this. Because this is going to be tough for all of us tonight, and maybe especially me. Because as a follower of Jesus, I should long for those things that are right. And so I'm gonna want to log on to a word that Pastor Steve used Sunday, and I think it's an appropriate word, and it's, that word is desire. And I would desire right things in my life. Now listen to me. So like winning the lottery, I don't call that a right thing. Is everybody with me on that? You know, or going to some restaurant, I don't count that a right thing. And hear me, I'm not saying that I'm not saying all those things are in an opposite category, but I'm talking about right things. And as a follower of Jesus, I'm living my life so that God will be pleased, that God will be glorified in my life. And so I want to live in a certain kind of way, but this is deeper. This isn't like the result of what's inside of you, because that's what drives my actions. And so when there's good stuff inside, there's good stuff coming out. When there's bad stuff inside, there's bad stuff coming out. This is speaking to a much deeper thing. It's not speaking to the actions. It's speaking to our hearts and to our souls. And it's almost a question that's being posed, you know. So if those who hunger and thirst for righteousness are blessed, then the question is, so do you hunger and thirst for righteousness? Do you hunger and thirst for right things in your life? Now, I do think we could say hunger and thirst for God, because God is right and God is righteous. I want you to hear this. And so everybody logs on to the word love. Oh, well, God is love. And I can't tell you how many people have said the reason I don't believe in hell is because God is love. But do you know why? Or do you know what it takes to really understand the horror of hell? To really understand the horror of hell, you must understand the greatness of God. You have to. And so everybody grasp on to that God is love. Is God love? This will be interactive tonight, much like most Wednesday nights when I ask questions. Is God love? How do you know that? Because He says so in 1 John. We're told that God is love. So it's not necessarily, the skewed picture isn't God, the skewed picture is, so what is love? What is that? And to really properly understand what this love is, that we'll never be able to understand what righteousness is in longing for the things of God. We have got to stop painting a picture of who God is, because He's already painted the picture. He's already revealed Himself to us. And I really want us to understand that, because my temptation every day, because I don't long for the right things, is to paint a different picture of God. Well, God's okay with this part of my life. God knows I'm not perfect. Well, God knows that I'm doing my best. Well, God knows all that. And so I paint this picture of God who just winks at me and says, it's okay. But it's not. And so I've got to long for right things. And I really want you to hear this. In 2 Timothy 2:22, Paul tells this young Timothy, flee the evil desires of your youth. And I'm going to count here tonight that youth is from 80 and under. Raise your hand if you're 80 or under. Almost every one of you. Just nudge the person that didn't raise their hand. Make sure they're still with us. All right. Flee the evil desires of your youth. Guess what? Guess what that means? Anyone? Guess what that means? You. Look at yourself. I love it. People are trying. They're like, that means you have evil desires. How many of you didn't know that about yourself? You have evil desires. I love it. Like, we have guests tonight going, man, this place is freaky. Did somebody tell them I was coming? We have evil desires. So Paul says, flee the evil desires of your youth. What are some of those evil desires? I plead the fifth in case I might incriminate myself. I mean, what are some of those evil desires? Well, let me just be real generic and specific at the same time. It's those things that aren't pleasing to God. And I've got to long for the right things. Because I'm going to be honest. I haven't met a lot of young men who were dating some girl who really in their hearts at some point didn't want to sleep with them. I haven't met a lot of older men that haven't felt that way. I mean, Pastor Steve talked about it. He was talking to this old pastor one time. He said, man, at what age is sexual temptation not an issue anymore? And this old preacher is like 72 years old. He says, I'll let you know when I get there. So I've got to long for right things. And you know why I have to long for right things? Because guess what's inside of me? I love it. There's all these answers. Jesus, God. I have to long for right things because inside of me are not right things. Paul called those things evil. Now, it's tough when you say that because a lot of you gave me this really weird look when I said evil. Some of you are like, it's like poltergeisty. Is that a word? It's like, you know, that's like a horror thing. But the evil things are things that are not pleasing to God. Does everybody understand that? And so you know what that means if that's true? All of us have evil desires. Raise your hand if you have evil desires. Almost every one of you. All of us do. I do. You do. All of us do. And so that's why he's saying, blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. And that means that I've got these desires in me, and those desires are going to be fulfilled. Now listen to this. Paul says, flee from the evil desires of your youth. And I love the word flee. That means literally run from them. One of my favorite stories is Joseph. And he's at Potiphar's house, and he's in charge of everything Potiphar has. And Mrs. Potiphar, who you know was hot, came up because Joseph was hot, and she had an evil desire. Now, I want to ask you, do you think Joseph had an evil desire? Some of you are shaking your heads no. Some of you are shaking your heads yes. Here's how I know Joseph also had an evil desire, because guess what he did? He ran. He fled or fleed, however you want to say it. But he was gone because those desires were there. And I am susceptible to those things. And so I've got to flee from them. So listen, I talk to people all the time. A lot of you have heard this, but I'm going to say it again. One of my favorite things that I do here at Hillview, besides being with you all every Wednesday night, is that when anybody comes to know Christ, I get to follow up and talk to them. And it is so exciting to talk to people who are so excited about Jesus. And it's also exciting to talk to people who are so confused about, so what now? Because guess what a lot of people think should happen after they get saved? The evil desire should be gone. And it doesn't happen. So those desires are still there. You know why I'm saying this? Man, I pray to God this is an encouragement to some of you who've been struggling, depressed, not understanding what's going on, saying, where's God? Because you still have these evil desires. I don't know that you ever totally get rid of those desires while you're living on the planet. And so I don't see here that Paul's saying, so when those evil desires come, just stand strong against them. He doesn't even say that. What does he say do? Run! And so there's people thinking right now, so what does that mean? I mean, literally run? I think sometimes it literally means run. We used to have this accountability group when I was in college, and there was like 7 or 8 of us guys, and we'd meet every day. Or not every day. We'd meet once a week. We'd get together, pray, encourage each other. And like if you ever had a date, you always had to give a report on your date. And you'd come before the guys and they'd say, "What'd you do?" Like, "Well, yeah, we went to the movies and out to eat." "No. What'd you do?" "Nothing." "Okay, good, good. We're just asking." You know what? Every one of you needs somebody asking you, "What'd you do?" Every one of you. Nobody in here is exempt from that. Every one of us needs somebody like that in our life. So we got this guy in our group. His name's Chris. And he's going to have a date. And he's having a date with a girl that we told him you probably shouldn't even go out with. And I see children, so that's all I'm going to say about that tonight, is he didn't even need to go out with her, but she's hot. And so he decides he's got to go out with her because she's hot. Thank you. And so he has a date. Well, accountability night rolls around. We're all waiting. Chris doesn't come. Well, one of the guys in the group was actually the dorm director. And he has this key. It's called a pass key. That means he can get into any room in the dorm with that key. So we go up to Chris's room. And we give him 3 opportunities to come to the door. And that has nothing to do with like the rooster and all that stuff. But anyway, we knock 3 times. He doesn't come out. So finally we go in and he's laying on his bed crying his eyes out. And he's saying, "Don't ask me what I did. Don't ask me what I did." So what do you do? What do you do in a moment like that? He did not flee the evil desires of his youth. He succumbed to those desires. Well, we just kind of got around him, prayed for him, told him we loved him, told him next time he had to listen to us. All loving things that you say. Listen, I want to encourage you. This sermon is not like, in case you've succumbed to the evil desires. Guess what I know about you people? You've succumbed to the evil desires. And how do I know that? Because I have too. That's exactly right. We're all in this together. And so Paul's giving us advice. Listen, flee from the evil desires of your youth. Galatians 5:17 says this: the sinful nature desires what is contrary to the Spirit. So guess what that means? We've got a sinful nature, and guess what it always wants to do? What's not pleasing to God. Why? Because those things lead to death. That's what the enemy wants for us, to lead us to death. And so we have these desires, and so all of you probably are like, okay, already, we know. So what do we do? How do we do this? And honestly, all I can really do is just go through the scriptures tonight. The result of being hungry and thirsty is death, isn't it? I mean, how long can the body go without food? Anybody know? What's the longest you've ever gone without food? For me personally, it's probably been 15 or 20 minutes. What's the longest you've gone? We know one guy went for 40 days without any, right? Jesus. I got three buddies that are pastors, and they did a 40-day fast. No food. And I'm trying to work my way up to that right now. I'm up to 40 minutes. And I always call them, say, "Hey, 40 minutes, you know. You're going to die without food. You're going to die without water. We have to have those things. But paradoxically, listen to this. If you don't hunger and you don't thirst, you will die. And this is reminiscent of spiritual death. And I say this tonight because I want this to be an encouragement that God desires to give us life and life to the full, abundant life. And so sometimes, you know, I'm thinking, God, how do I have abundant life if like there's all these things I can't do? I mean, God, it'd just be better if we're saved and then we can just do all the things we want to do and you bless those things. But God doesn't do that. Why? Because we have to have an accurate picture of who God is. And God is love. And being that God is love means that God is just. And God is perfect. He's holy. And that's a standard that He's calling every one of us to. And so Galatians reminds us that the sinful nature does what's contrary to the Spirit. And the Spirit what is contrary to the sinful nature. So I want to encourage you. If you ever feel like you want to do something bad. I mean, really bad, you know? Everybody know what I'm talking about? You're lying, every one of you. The sinful nature, listen, that old creature, the old man that's there, we're always battling against that. And so I love talking to these new converts, you know, and you know, talk to this couple and they're new converts and they're dating, you know, and they're just like, so does this mean we can't sleep together anymore? I said, no, that's not what that means. It means you got to get married first before you sleep together. I highly recommend marriage and then a lot of sex. How many of you recommend that? I love it. Yeah, all great. Why are the single people clapping? So those desires are there. And I don't know why whenever some preacher gives an example of some sin, it's always like premarital sex. I don't know what. I think just most people have an understanding of that kind of a desire. And it's hard. I mean, I've told you before, I talk to these couples who are about to get married. And I always ask them, are you guys struggling to, you know, is it tempting to be together before you get married? And since they're in my office and I'm a pastor, they always say, oh, no, not at all. And you know what I always tell them? Don't get married. You ought to want, that desire ought to be there in the person you're going to marry. I mean, it should be there, but don't. But it ought to be there, and it's okay to, as long as you are staying pure. That's a good thing. Those desires are there. They're inside of us. And there's a bunch of other desires. How many of you sometimes have the desire to just cuss somebody out that you work with? A bunch of hands. That you live with. Not as many hands. You know, I mean, that desire is there. That you just want to just, I mean, really let somebody have a verbal blast with every expletive you can think of or ever heard. You want to do that. That desire is there. And I just want to prove to you that that's not a good desire. Because if you've ever done that, that was probably called your last day at that job. Or that was a really fun 2 weeks in marriage. Listen, those desires are there. They're going to be there. And so when I talk to these new converts, they really get excited about that. So you mean this is okay? Well, I'm not saying that it's okay. I'm saying the reality is that those desires are there. So flee those desires. And that's the hardest thing to really talk to people about. Because if you're a drug addict and you're recovering, guess what you don't ever need to be around? But they're my old friends. No, they're not. They're the old people that were trying to kill you. And you got to get out of that, no matter what that means. Well, what if I'm lonely? You won't be lonely at the end of this life. When you die, you'll be in heaven with a whole bunch of people having a gigantic party with no drugs. That's worth 40 or 50 years of loneliness. Trust me. Those desires are there. So the Bible doesn't instruct us, you know, that in those desires, check yourself, those desires shouldn't be there. The Bible says they're there. You've got to look out for those things. You've got to run from those things. So how do we do that? I mean, how do you really, really do that? Well, I just want to tell you, one of the great, and this will kind of come back to something we talked about last week, one of the great hindrances to this is pride. We just think, well, I can handle that. I can be in that place, or I can be with that person, and it's going to be okay. No, you can't. And it's pride that says that. And it's pride that makes us want to stay. And it's pride that tries to convince us that we can be there. That's pride. And pride comes before a fall. So get ready. And so I tell people, don't tell yourself, well, I can do it. I can do it. Tell yourself this, I can't do it. I can't do it. And that's going to lead to better things and lead to life and lead to not getting in all those situations. Now listen, I want to bring this all down to this. Because really, honestly, as much as I've talked about it, the sermon tonight is not about those evil desires. The sermon tonight is about desiring God and wanting God in my life and wanting God to be pleased with my life. In Galatians 2:20, it says, I've been crucified with Christ and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. And that means this, the only power I'll have to flee from those things or to not be around those things is that Christ is in me. But there's a whole other desire that has to take place. Now, I want to say this, for a lot of you this would be repetition, but I want to say this because the one thing that made me absolutely certain of my salvation, and by the way, you should be absolutely certain of your salvation. I ask so many people, if you died today, do you believe you'd go to heaven? And so many people say, I hope so. You know what I tell people hope so means? No. Because the Bible says these things have been written to you who believe in the name of the Son of God so that you may know you have eternal life. You should know that. That shouldn't be a question for you tonight if you're a follower of Jesus. You should know that. And I want to say this because we're going to have a time of invitation. If you don't know that for certain, I plead with you to come to this altar tonight. I plead with you to talk to somebody tonight because you should know that for certain. So I tell these new converts, those old desires are there, but here's how I knew I was a Christian. There was a new desire in my life that I never had before. And that was a desire to please God. And I got to be honest, I never cared about pleasing God until I became a Christian. That desire just wasn't there. You know why? Because it's not natural. What's natural is for me to think that I don't need God or I don't have to believe in a God. That's what's natural. That I can just count on me, and I've let me down every time. And so it's unnatural to have a desire for God or desire to please God. So where does that desire come from? I tell you what, y'all just aren't talking to me tonight. Some of you are like, is he serious about 9 o'clock? Because I got to go to Ryan's. Listen, if you have that desire for God or that desire to please God, that comes from God Himself. He places that desire within you. And you know why I say that? Because maybe some of you will say, you know, I do have a desire to please God. Well, that's from God. That you didn't come up with that. You didn't find that in a book and say, hey, I think I'm going to desire God. You can't. It's unnatural. The sinful nature desires what is contrary to the Spirit of God. So for you to have a godly desire, God has to put it there. But that's a great thing. So sometimes you're in a situation you don't need to be in, and this thought comes, I don't need to do this. This doesn't please God. That's from God. That's an awesome thing. That's an encouragement. That's an encouragement to you. Because if you're a believer, you've been crucified with Christ and you no longer live, but it's Christ that lives in you. And you won't be perfected until after this life when you're in heaven. That's when you'll be with no sin and perfect and all those things. But welcome to the planet where you have evil desires. Where you want to do things that are contrary to the Spirit of God. But here's the deal. There was a cross and a resurrection. And Jesus' body was broken. His blood was spilled so that you and I could be forgiven. So that you and I could desire God and desire godly things. I'm asking everybody to look up here. Psalm 73:25 says, the earth, the psalmist writes, the earth has nothing I desire. Except you, O Lord. That verse is like a double-edged sword because I love to read it. I mean, that sounds sweet. The earth has nothing I desire except you, O Lord. But it's a double-edged sword because there are things I desire. But I want to try to wrap this up by saying this. Because some people may say, well, I've got children and I desire my children. You know, and is that bad? No, that's a godly thing. Children are a gift from God. Everybody with me on that? You may be in a season where you're questioning that, but this too will pass. But they're a gift from God. And so if you have a desire for your children, that's a godly desire. You have a desire for your marriage. That's a godly desire. That is a good thing. That is a right thing. Is everybody with me? And so I always, and I say this all the time, 100% of the joy that comes into my life comes from God. But guess what? Sometimes He brings it through Samuel, and sometimes through William, and sometimes through Molly, and sometimes through Allie. That was four, right? And sometimes through my wife, you know. But it's always from God. Every good and perfect gift is from God. And so all the joy in my life from all those things, they're from God. But He brings them to those people. So those are godly desires. Those are godly things. So the psalmist isn't talking about this. The psalmist is saying, God, I only desire You. And whatever that means in your life, for me, it's my kids. It's my marriage. It's those things, you know. It's the calling that's on my life. Those are good, right desires. And so the psalmist can say, Lord, in all the earth, there's nothing I desire except for You. And that means, and the things that come from You, God. And that's a powerful thing.
And then I want to wrap it up by saying this. Psalm 37:4 says, delight yourself in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. All right, we're going to lead an invitation because this is going to be the toughest part. So the only way I can desire God is for God to put that desire in me. That's it. That's the only way. You know what that means? That means you can't even want to be saved unless God puts that desire in your heart. And that's what makes salvation so miraculous, that God did that. You didn't wake up one day and say, well, I don't think I want to get saved. No, God did that. That God did that working in your life. And so I want to ask you, what do you desire? What do you desire? Some of you here and you're single and so you say, I desire to be married. Well, that can be a good and right thing as long as your pursuit is of God and not of marriage. Is everybody with me? So I got these kids, and that's a good and right thing as long as my pursuit is not those kids, but it's God. And I meet plenty of people who worship their children. And guess who's going to suffer because of it? Their children. Because the best thing I can give my kids and my wife is that my boys see a man who desires God. And that's tough to say. If you're like a really manly man, you're probably trying to filter that through. So how does a guy desire God? I just know that I need him. And I know that I can't get through anything without him. And I know my kids have no hope except for him. And I desire them to know him. And guess what? If you desire your kids to know God, then you better have a relationship with him. If you desire your boys to be godly men, then you better be a godly man. And ladies, if you desire your daughters to be godly women, you better be a godly woman. And you better do life the way God's calling you to. And flee from those evil desires because they're there. And hearing this sermon tonight doesn't eliminate them. Don't email me at ward@hillview.com tomorrow and say, I still have evil desires. You're going to have them the rest of your life. I saw this great little skit on Mad TV where this lady comes in and she's afraid of being buried in a box. And Bob Newhart plays the counselor and he says, have you ever been buried in a box? She's like, no. He goes, okay. And so she starts telling him all these things. He said, well, here's how I do this. I have two words for you. And I'm just going to say these two words and we'll be done. She gets out this pad of paper. He goes, most people remember the two words. So she's told him about all these desires she has. He goes, oh, well, okay, here we go. Here are the two words. And he goes, stop it! But I just like men who aren't very good to me. Stop it! I just think about being buried alive in a box. Stop it! I said, I love that. Every pastor should have to go through that counseling methodology. When these people come in and say, I just like to do drugs. Stop! I can save you a word. Or I just like to sleep around. Stop! I just like to do these unhealthy things. Stop! Quit! And some of you are saying, it's not that easy. That's right, and that's why you have to desire God. And long for Him. So delight yourself in the Lord and He'll give you the desires of your heart. But here's the trick. He gives you the desires of your heart after He's given you those desires to even have. What do you desire? I mean, come on. How many of you really desire God? You know why most of our neighbors don't know Jesus and we've lived by Him for 25 years? Because we don't desire God. And they see that we don't. They see that we desire the same things that they do. And that's a reality. I desire the same things probably my neighbor does. The difference is, as a follower of Jesus, I should have a desire that he doesn't have. And that's a desire to please God. You know what? Some of you here tonight, and this is the truth. This is where the rubber meets the road. Some of you here tonight, and even tonight, you're contemplating your marriage. And you're saying, I don't know if I can be in it much longer. Know if I can hang in there. Some of you are saying, man, I've seen somebody else. And you know what? Desire God. Some of you tonight are about to give up on a kid. That ungrateful brat I've taken care of for all these years. You know what? Desire God. Some of you are feeling a lot of pity because a lot of things are breaking down in your life. Listen, we all understand that. All of us have been there. A lot of us maybe are there. You know what? Desire God. Long for Him more than anything else. Come to a place where you can say, there's nothing the earth has that I desire except You, O God. I want You. That's what's going to make a difference in people's lives. That's what's going to make a difference
in our lives. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. I was preaching at a church, and it was like just powerful service. Like it was one of the, like most of the times when you preach, you don't feel great about it. That's why you throw out your email address and people will email you and say, that was awesome. Everybody get that? But there are those few times when you've preached and you feel like, wow, that was awesome. I'm taking notes on myself. That was good. And man, we'd had this powerful service. It's powerful service. I jumped off the stage, which that wouldn't freak anybody out here at Hillview, but at other churches, that freaks them out. Especially when you're going 6 feet over the communion table, you know. And I just got down there and I said, blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness. And I was just feeling bold and I said, you know what? You shouldn't even leave here until you hunger and thirst for righteousness. It was powerful. I mean, you could feel the Spirit of God. Man, people were crying. People were already coming to the altar. And that's when you know you've had a great service. When people come to the altar before you told them they can. I said, you don't even leave here tonight unless you hunger and thirst for God. Grab my Bible. Headed to the back. Get to the back. And I hear God say, where are you going? It's like, oh, I'm done, God. It's awesome, wasn't it? I'm going to McDonald's. Go to grab the door, and it's like I could hear God say, where are you going? I was like, I'm done, God. I mean, we gave it to him. It's like God said to me, but you said don't leave until you hunger and thirst for righteousness. I said, I know, wasn't that good? He said, then you don't need to leave. I don't know what to do tonight. Because I know there can be a crisis in your life that will drive you to that point. And God will bring about the crisis. He'll bring about the pain. He'll bring about all that. You know why? Because He loves you. Remember, love doesn't just mean He gives you everything you want. Love means He desires you to follow Him. Do you hunger and thirst for righteousness? Do you really desire God for the altar? If you're sitting there and you're like, I don't, I'm going to ask you to just come to the altar and say, God, I don't desire you. Because only He can change that. And I'm going to ask you to come and trust Him. God, I don't like getting it. Some of you are trembling tonight because all these things I've talked about, we're in areas where you're struggling, you're like, I am really struggling in that area. Desire God. So I pray God would break open the altar tonight. We would come and get on our face before Him and say, oh God, that I would desire nothing but You. I'm going to ask you to stand. The altar is open. Please come.